Welcome to the Fight Night Picks Recap Show. I'm John Franklin. This week on the show, we discuss all the fights from the big one, UFC 251. The main event was Usman Masvidal. It came from Fight Island. Let's bring in to start this discussion our man Cameron Romanek. Cameron, well, we made it. Dana said there was going to be a Fight Island, and there was a Fight Island. It's not exactly what we thought it was going to be, but that's really neither here nor there. I want to talk about the venue to start. In the end, did it really matter? I mean, we got the International Fighters some run. Mm-hmm. I thought it ended up being some sort of marketing creation by Dana. A lot of talk for something that really didn't affect things very much. What'd you think about the venue, and how much of the Fight Island did you get kind of wrapped up in?
Well, I got to say Dana was right. I mean, he pulled it off. He did it. Another thing I just want to say really quick he was right about was the fact that the bigger cage looks better. I do agree. I think the bigger cage did look more pleasing to the eye. But yeah, I mean, I didn't get too wrapped up in it. I mean, the marketing was great. The t-shirts were great. All the pictures they took of that octagon on the beach were great. Yeah, I mean, Fight Island, if it works, it works. And I'm excited for these next three cards there.
Yeah, I don't know what people were expecting. I don't know if they thought that it was going to be like two guys fighting on a beach or gals fighting on a beach.
Yeah.
A beach volleyball game going on behind them, and someone with an umbrella. I mean, yeah. I don't know what they were looking for.
Palm trees in the background.
Yeah, you kind of figured that it was going to be something like this. I mean, it had to be. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, had they done what everybody wanted to do from a media creation standpoint, you got people out there in the humidity. It doesn't make sense logistically, though. It's weird. It's one of those, like, disconnects. Do you think – I mean, we knew that the big cage was going to be here, but do you think – actually, let's get into the main event, because I'm wondering how a small cage would have affected this card, which was a pretty good card. So, all right. Cameron, it was the fight we wanted, but maybe not the way we wanted it. Jorge Masvidal stepped up on 6 days' notice to take on welterweight champion Kamaru Usman. Let's talk about both these guys. They're at the top of the food chain at 170 pounds. Usman undefeated with the promotion at 11-0. Only three other guys have done that, and they all currently have or will have Hall of Fame jackets. Hoyce Gracie, Anderson Silva, and Khabib Nurmagomedov. The last three fights for Usman are Dos Anjos, Woodley, and Covington. Obviously all victories. For Masvidal, he's the hottest, most marketable fighter on the planet, not named Conor McGregor. The BMF champ, his last three are well documented. It's Till, it's Askren, it's Nate Diaz. Okay, so let's talk about the stakes. For Usman, it's, you know, we're trying to raise his profile, right? He's not the most famous guy in the world. So we put him in there with guys who are more famous than him, there's some beef there. He overcomes it and becomes something bigger. The big win over Covington got him halfway. Mm-hmm. But defeating and dominating Masvidal would solidify Usman's star. For Masvidal, unlike Usman, whose next opponent is probably going to be Gilbert Burns, the BMF belt holder probably has a shot at Conor McGregor if he wins. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he didn't. So let's get to it. Kamaru Usman defeated Jorge Masvidal by unanimous decision, 50-45, 50-45, 49-46, to retain the title. For me, it's a very simple one-sided fight. Usman went to the wrestling early and often. And I mean, if we're being honest, had a pretty easy night. Let's talk about what you saw. And I guess the question is, was the performance a result of Masvidal's short notice or Usman's superiority?
I think part of it can be attributed to the short notice. I mean, Masvidal described it after the fight as him not trusting his gas tank as a result, or that was kind of what caused his passivity. We're kind of because you saw a lot of him up against the fence in the clinch, and he didn't have a lot of movement, didn't throw a lot of strikes, didn't really take the space when they broke, didn't try and circle off the cage. I think it was Masvidal just being shocked kind of by the strength of Usman. I mean, Usman was able to just hold him in place for basically 25 minutes. Masvidal didn't really get off many shots. It was about as one-sided as it gets. It's a typical Usman performance at this point against someone who isn't going to try and, who isn't going to negate the wrestling. And, you know, another vintage Usman. I think same result kind of happens even on full camp for Masvidal. It's just hard to see Usman losing at this point.
I think that maybe Masvidal was expecting what the first round was, where he got some shots in, found him a little bit, and said, okay, I could probably rock him. And, you know, the thing with a guy like Usman, in my opinion, is you have to let him in a way, convince himself that he's a striker and start to feel himself with stand-up. You know, guys like Johnny Hendricks, and we've seen guys in the past that their wrestling was so good that they say to themselves, you know, one of the best quotes that Joe Rogan's ever had, and this is part of the reason why my son does jiu-jitsu, is Joe Rogan says, the reason I train jiu-jitsu is because if I end up facing off with somebody, I want to be able to decide who gets hurt, which I love as a quote. And I think that when you're as good of a wrestler as Johnny Hendricks is, and now we'll spin that forward to Kamaru Usman, you're like, I get to decide where this fight takes place, on the feet or on the ground. So at worst, I can play around on my feet, see what I got, and then always be able to fall back to the wrestling. And the hope with someone like Jorge Masvidal is he's going to play around longer than he should and get caught.
Thanks for having me as a part of the show at Craig Allen FNP. And listen, I'm really looking forward to this. We've got a great partnership that we've struck with Ringside Beer, some awesome merch over on their site. They've got some really cool tap handles. I got the MMA glove tap handle. I got the boxing glove tap handle for their lagers. And listen, I couldn't believe that this was the introductory offer that they have to just our viewers with Fight Night Picks. But if you use the promo code FNP at checkout, ringsidebeerstore.com, you get 25% off your order. They've got some awesome merch over there. They want you to get in the ring with Ringside Beer. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff with those guys, so make sure you check them out, ringsidebeerstore.com. And as always, like we like to say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it.
One thing I want to talk to you about that I think is getting lost in all this is the output for Masvidal, only because of in the way it came. So if we look at the stats, I mean, he had huge numbers, 263 strikes on 341 attempts, 77%. Now, listen, Masvidal had 88 of 157. He's over 50% as well. But I think he was kind of pot-shotting, so that's why, you know, he was looking for it. When the shot was there, he'd take it. Let's talk about Usman in terms of being in the clinch, stomping feet, using shoulder strikes, working the body. I mean, is that, you think, just a byproduct of that he knew his man was on short notice? Or is this opening up? I mean, he's always kind of done this, but you know what I'm saying? He really made a very solid effort to do it last night. What are your thoughts on all that?
I think Usman was making a point to try and hurt Masvidal in any way possible. Also, it's part of his clinch game where he distracts, foot stomps, shoulder strikes, stuff that really doesn't do much to you, but stuff that's going to keep you busy and keep you thinking about what's next. Is he going to try and take me down? What's he doing with his foot stomp here? Instead of, you know, trying to circle, trying to dig for underhooks, trying to get off the cage, Usman can just hold you there and do really whatever he wants to you. It could be also that he's short notice, that he's just trying to wear Masvidal down because he knows his gas tank isn't going to be all there. So, overall, I think it's part of Usman's game, but it's also, targeting Jorge specifically with those kind of short body shots, shoulder strikes, foot stomps.
As we get deeper into the game of like what MMA is all about, and some of the things that if you're a casual fan and you can't just look at and see and say this is something I'm seeing, you know, what doesn't get talked about a lot is just overload, and when you're facing a fighter and they just overload your brain with things that you need to read. And that in and of itself becomes exhausting, right? And like you said, Usman's got him up against the cage. Instead of just holding him there, maybe, you know, occasionally where Masvidal can feel him out and say, okay, this is the part where he's going to do some separation, try and hit me with an elbow. I can feel that. I know that's coming. He just seems like he was giving him so much and not wasting energy. Usman, you know, he says, if I'm going to use the energy to keep him against the cage, I might as well use just a little bit more to stomp his feet and keep him constantly, you know, on overload. Here's the number that sticks out for me, which concerns me about this whole 6 days notice. And a lot has been made, you know, even Jurgen De Castro came out and said on Twitter, guys, don't fall for it. Fighters train 5 days a week, year round, to which I replied, he never hit me back, but I replied, well, then what the hell's the point of a training camp? Yeah. You're telling me that you're always ready. What's a training camp for? And I was waiting for him to say whatever he said. And then my response to that would have been, well, obviously, he didn't have that. Whatever you're saying the point of a training camp is, Masvidal didn't have what that thing is.
Yeah.
The 5 of 16 on takedowns is concerning to me. Because if I'm saying that it's Masvidal's gas tank that led to it, Okay. Is that a tricky number in the sense that maybe Masvidal defended takedowns better early and then late Usman didn't make have to make a lot because he took him down and kept him there? Is that is that a tricky number?
Yeah.
Or does it or does it really speak to Masvidal's success? Or was he just successful early? That's what I feel.
I think Jorge's takedown defense kind of held up throughout most of the fight. I mean, the last couple of rounds there were some iffy ones where Usman just drove through him and just had him to the ground. Masvidal's always going to be crafty. He's well-rounded. He's got decent wrestling. He's got a good get-up game. But, you know, you can't – no one's going to fend off that many takedowns from Usman, training camp or not. I think that's fair to say.
So let's talk about Masvidal and assess him to where he is now, because he's going to make the case for it was a short-notice fight. He's probably going to have to take a fight next he doesn't want to take. Colby Covington, Leon Edwards. I mean, Dana's going to try and squeeze this orange for everything he can get from it. He obviously didn't put himself in position for McGregor. So if we're looking at what are the fights that we can book that's going to make the most money with Masvidal, it's Nate Diaz, it's Colby Covington, and it's Leon Edwards. Those are the three fights where you can really get money out of this. So I guess my question is Masvidal a guy who had some really good performances against people that we overrated? Because, you know, when he fought Darren Till, if memory serves, Darren Till was talking about not fighting and he had all kinds of mental issues. Like, he was just all over the place around the time Masvidal fought him. Now he's a different guy. He seems to have righted the ship. Ben Askren's wildly overrated, probably lost to Robbie Lawler. And Nate Diaz, for everything that he is, you know, he fights every so often. He's kind of out of his prime. Have we been overrating Jorge Masvidal because of his opponents, or is he really at the top of that 170-pound food chain? Like, is the fact that he went five rounds with Kamaru Usman a byproduct of Usman getting a late change too? Or, like, if he went against Colby Covington full camp, Leon Edwards full camp, is he at their level?
I think so. I think. I mean, obviously, his wins come against weird fighters. I mean, Ben Askren's a weird fighter. Darren Till didn't belong at the weight class. And Nate Diaz is kind of always a B-level fighter who's talked about as, like, a superstar among fans. But I think Jorge, I'd love to see him fight Colby next. I think that's the fight to make. I think that would be very marketable and a very big fight. It would be a big draw. And I think Jorge would actually win that fight. I would pick him in that one. But I think Usman's just a whole nother level of in the weight class. I don't know if you talk about Colby, Leon, you know, throwing a Wonder Boy in that mix, Jorge, and then a whole step up is Kamaru, I think. And I think all these guys can hang around at the top of the weight class, but until one of them really proves something, I don't think. Like, if Jorge had fought, you know, different welterweight contenders during his rise, say he had fought Till, then Colby, then Nate, I think that would make his, like, how fans think of him a lot more justifiable than they did going into the Kamaru fight. I don't think he necessarily looked awful in the Kamaru fight. He just didn't look good, and it's really hard to look good against Usman.
So then let's talk about Gilbert Burns. He's the guy that should have got this fight. I think he better take to Twitter quickly in the lead. He shot a tweet out there last night about having COVID and breathing on someone. He doesn't want that
problem. Yeah.
So he needs to get that. He needs to clean that Twitter up. But because so he can focus on the fights. But my point is that do you think that Burns has the skill set that's going to be problematic for Usman? Because I think Usman is better in a lot of – I mean, listen – Usman has the ace in the hole, which is the wrestling.
Yeah.
And there's a handful of guys, probably none, at 170. I think that Colby probably is one of the best fights out there. I mean, we saw that. That was a great fight.
Sure.
If Khabib wanted to fight at 170, that'd be a hell of a fight.
Yep.
Do you think Burns has what it takes to take this fight? Because a lot of people were ready to pick him.
I was thinking going into the last night's main event that it would be competitive, and it wasn't. And it just makes me think that the Burns fight, because I thought it would be competitive, and now after seeing last night's, I'm not sure it would be. I don't think he would take down Burns as much as he did Masvidal, but the clinch, I think he still would have a significant advantage in the clinch. Strength-wise, he's a lot bigger. And just the way he can wear on people, he's just freakishly strong. Has that cardio that he can go 25 minutes, he can go 50 minutes. I mean, I'm not sure what Burns has for him. Maybe some striking, but I think Usman actually has cleaned up his striking a lot. His defense is there. His offensive striking isn't great. His jab is somewhat working for him. And now that he's working with Trevor Whitman, I think that'll only get better. So I don't know if Burns can compete. I mean, maybe I give him like a puncher's chance, but I would favor Usman heavily.
And lastly, let's talk about Trevor Whitman, because they seem to really have a connection in the corner. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Whitman's that kind of guy. I mean, he gets in deep with his fighters and builds bonds and connects to them. Obviously, he sticks with Whitman for the Burns fight, because that was the whole point of training with Whitman.
Yeah.
I tweeted something out last night that if he stays with Whitman, he'll get close to GSP all time, I believe.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Do you think he's going to stay with Whitman? I mean, there's a lot of talk about the separation from his daughter and this, that, and the other. Yeah. I don't think he wants to go live in Colorado.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think that he's the kind of guy that's going to stick with Whitman because he's that cerebral of a fighter to know the things that Whitman brings to the table? Or do you think that he's a little bit narcissistic enough to say, I can handle this without him?
I think he'll stick with Whitman. I think he knows how special and how good of a coach Whitman is. And it seemed like in interviews, Henry Hooft was saying that Usman's moving on. So it seems like he's going to be full-time with Whitman, which I think would be massive. I think that could be like a GSP for Asahabi type connection. So, I mean, the longer he's with Whitman, the better he's going to get. And his all-time great status is going to keep getting cemented.
Here's the thing that I would want to keep an eye on with those two. Is that sometimes when you go with a new coach and people want to heap praise on that coach, you want to remind everybody of how good you were before that coach.
Yeah.
That, I think, could be a fracture. Because the one thing I noticed, and I may have not been paying full attention last night, was when he was giving credit to his coaches after the fight, I didn't hear Whitman's name. And I don't know if it was because – I don't know what it was because. I heard, like he said, Carrington Banks and my brother. He was talking about, like, the continuity of his camp. Whereas most people wanted to just heap praise on Whitman. I think that could get interesting, but we'll see. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the co-main event. So, it was a hell of a night for fights, Cameron. The list for featherweight GOAT is a short one, and both fighters were on the island on last night, on the last evening. It's either Max Holloway or bantamweight title contender for the evening, Jose Aldo. Alex Volkanovski, however, has fought both men and beat them both. The story here is the last fight, which was close, but most who watched, I thought, as well as me, thought Volkanovski won. The stakes in this one are simple. Was Volkanovski's win the result of a great game plan and a one-off that Holloway will clean up on his way to all-time featherweight greatness, or is Volkanovski the better fighter? It was Holloway early, talking technique, and Volkanovski late. For me, I felt like Holloway thought it was his night in the second round after the uppercut sat Alex the Great down, and he just stopped winning the exchanges. He just said, okay, it's my night, and he stopped doing everything that he had done in the first and second round effectively. And I thought that third round was where Holloway could either lock it down as a win, and he let Volkanovski creep back in, and then the fourth and the fifth were Volkanovski's, and here we are. What'd you see? I mean, that's the story of it, but technically, what did you see as different with Holloway?
So I scored it for Max. Upon rewatching it, I actually gave the third round to Volkanovski. I watched the fight again after the card had concluded. But I saw Max not getting confused by feints. I mean, Volkanovski in the first fight, it was faint leg kick. It was double feints. It was just keeping Max on his toes where Max couldn't command the distance. And in those first two rounds last night, I mean, Max controlled the distance perfectly. Every time Volkanovski stepped in, he met him with a knee. He met him with an uppercut. Every time Volkanovski threw a leg kick, he threw one right back. It was kind of like he had adjusted perfectly to what Volkanovski's game plan was in that first fight. And I really thought this was – it was first two rounds, it was looking like Max's best performance maybe of his career. I mean, he was looking phenomenal. Dropped him with a head kick, dropped him with an uppercut. He was landing combos to the body. I mean, those first two rounds were unreal. And that third round, it seemed like Max kind of took his foot off the gas, and Volkanovski was able to adjust, actually, and start finding his jab, start finding a left hook followed by a right hook. He was moving. He wasn't moving backwards. Those first two rounds, Max was pressuring, backing Volkanovski up, and Volkanovski made the adjustments. I mean, like he said, Volkanovski said he hoped before the fight. He said he hoped Max would make the adjustments, but he would be able to adjust right back. And he said it after the fight as well. He said that he knew Max would change his game plan going into this one, and he kind of credited himself for making adjustments on the fly during the fight.
You know, let's talk about overload, because when I'm on my game, Cameron, I give these podcast themes. So The theme of this one could be overload. And one of the things that I think that gets forgotten about Max Holloway is that what makes him great is he's able to overload you with a lot. You know, he's kind of a Hawaiian Diaz brother with his volume, and he goes to the body, and he goes to the head, and he kicks the legs. And I think in the first and second round, the way you drop Volkanovski with a head kick is he just goes, I don't know what the hell this kid's going to throw. I'm completely overloaded with information. I'm trying to read him. And then, you know, you zig and he zags, and next thing you know, you're on your ass. And then same thing in the second. You know, he drops you in the first with a head kick, drops you in the second with an uppercut. You don't know what's coming. So I think that when you talk about taking your foot off the gas pedal, I think that sometimes people think that taking your foot off the gas pedal is a byproduct of or is the result of you taking your foot off the gas pedal is I you're not imposing your will on me anymore, and I'm able to get set. And that's true. But I also think that it's that I am able to process what you're doing much easier and get to my reads because you're not giving me as much to process. Right? If you give me a test, I don't care who you are, if it's a math test and you give me 100 problems, it's different than if you give me 10 and the same amount of time to complete them. So I think that in the third round, Max just gave him less problems to solve. And I think that opened up, and he gave him the space with which to assert himself. I talked a lot about respect in the first fight, and I felt like Volkanovski came into this fight with the respect, right? I won the last one. I showed everybody that you're not who they think you are. But I thought Max grabbed the respect in the first and second. He said, listen, man, it's going to be a different night. And then, like you said, that third round became pivotal of, is Max going to continue to assert the respect? And he just didn't. And I think that's where the fight swung for me.
Yeah.
Again, you know, these fights come down to really small exchanges. I don't know who said it, but someone said on Twitter, it might have been Bisbing, someone said on Twitter that what Max did in the first and second round was a bigger deal than what Volkanovski did in the third, fourth, and fifth.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that, but unless we're going to go to a system where we really see true 10-8s, you know, in boxing, if someone gets sat down, it's a decisive round. Mm-hmm. And we don't really do that in MMA. You can get a 10-9 even if you hit the floor. Now, the reason for that being is that in boxing, you know, you hitting the floor is a 10 count or an 8 count. In MMA, you hit the floor, you get right back up. Or the guy pounces you and that's a wrap. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about all that? Do you think that you know, it was just as simple as Max giving Volkanovski the space to bring himself back in?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, the scoring system allows for this kind of result to happen. And it seemed like Max just wasn't mixing it up as much in those later rounds as he was in the first and second. And it seemed like Volkanovski was sitting down on more punches. He found space in the pocket to step in while evading uppercuts and knees and whatnot. And it just seemed like, I mean, maybe it was hard to tell, but maybe the leg kicks added up eventually for Volkanovski and slowed Max's movement down, because you could see on the inside of that lead leg of Max, it was bright red for most of the fight. So it's hard to say, because Max didn't really show pain or didn't show any wincing or anything like that. So it's just the result was just a byproduct of Max not sticking with, I guess, his game plan or his style, because it was looking like a vintage Max performance early on.
I agree. All right, well, let's talk about what comes next. A third fight's pretty much out of the question, although Holloway did look better. I mean, you could see a case being made for it just because it was split. Both fights were close. The two fights I think that loom largest in this division are Magomed Sharipov and Yair Rodriguez, which I don't think is officially booked, and Wednesday's Calvin Kattar Dan Ige fight. Is it as simple for you as one of those four, if they're impressive in victory, gets the shot? Or do you think Kattar and Ige, listen, the last thing I want to do is call them junior varsity, but are they big enough yet to hold down the B side of a featherweight title fight? Like, are they big enough to be like, I mean, the reason why you rematch Max Holloway, and we'll get to the Petr Yan Jose Aldo fight in a second, but the reason why we get some of these matchups where we don't agree with them is because you need a guy with a big enough name. And I don't know if Kattar and Ige are that yet. I don't really know if Yair Rodriguez and Magomed Sharipov are either. But what do you see at 45 for Volkanovski?
So for the next title shot, I'd like to see the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega get booked. I don't know when, but I think that fight needs to happen. And the winner of that, I think, are big enough to hold down the other side of a title fight. And then for Kattar and Ige, the winner of that will need one more, or maybe even two against, I mean, it's hard to say just because they're so less known than like the top three or top five of that division. And then I think for Zabit Magomed Sharipov and Yair Rodriguez, the winner of that, I think, should actually face Max if he wants to stay at the weight class for a chance back at Volkanovski.
I like that. That's probably, yeah, I'm with all of that. I mean, everything you said, there's nothing more to say when you lay it out perfectly. I like everything you said there. I want to talk about Calvin Kattar and Ige as we transition to the Bantamweight Championship. And the reason why is because you got a guy like Petr Yan, who I like to talk when I talk to Craig. You know, Petr Yan's like a hipster's dream, right? He's one of the ones that, like, he's like the guy who was like on the underground and then he shows up. And then, but here's where I was impressed with him last night is he showed real championship mettle. And we'll get to that here when we talk about techniques. But that's what I think is the hope for a guy like Kattar or a guy like, you know, where you're kind of on the underground, or a guy like Burgos, where people are saying, man, this guy does this, that, and the other. And, you know, you kind of quietly work your way into contention where other guys just kind of hit the scene. Adesanya hit the scene and he was just, you know, he had a rocket strapped to his ass and he just went right to stardom. Not everybody's that way. So let's talk about the Bantamweight title fight. When Henry Cejudo retired in May after his victory over Dominic Cruz, it was believed that Petr Yan was the uncrowned champion, having defeated Uriah Faber. I mean, it all kind of just made sense. Bantamweight is full of fighters who seem to be like kind of guys who hold belts in between generational fighters, right? A guy like Robbie Lawler, the guy that you kind of forget, even though Robbie Lawler is an all-time great, you forget him as a title holder. He's going to be like, you're going to have GSP, Usman, and you're going to kind of wonder who was in between them. Yeah. But Petr Yan could be different, for me at least. The stakes in this one are for Yan, a career-defining victory over a Hall of Famer who's arguably the greatest fighter of all time in a division weight class, up for Aldo, someone who has been largely forgotten in the best all-time pound-for-pound discussion. A second belt would help put distance between him and Dominic Cruz, would help put distance between him and Demetrius Johnson, maybe even Anderson Silva in that discussion. You add another belt to the equation, things get interesting. Look at Henry Cejudo. Let's talk about the fight. Obviously, the discussion for Aldo remains the same. Petr Yan defeated Jose Aldo by TKO via strikes, 324 of the fifth round to take the undisputed title. Here's where I want to say Petr Yan, to me last night, established himself as potentially an all-time great. Mm-hmm. Very early on, Aldo took Petr Yan's strength away, which was fighting orthodox and his big right hand. And he went to the legs, and Yan, while he does switch stances, does it in a place of comfort. When he's starting to get after you, he might switch it up a little bit just to give you a different look. Aldo just took the right side away from him. And Yan still found his strikes, still found a way. Now, listen, I tweeted out last night that if Jose Aldo lost a step, I mean, what step did he have to begin with? Because he looked quick last night. He really did. And, but Yan showed me that on a night when Aldo is not prime Aldo, but still good, he can hang with him. The last thing we'll get to on this one is our friend Leon Roberts. He is definitely not a fan of another Fight Night Pick Show early stoppage because he let Aldo take – the joke I put on Twitter was Leon Roberts must be a Chad Mendes fan because he let Aldo get the business.
Yeah.
Talk about what you saw. He preys on Jan if you want to, and then the Roberts stoppage. What'd you see with all of it?
Yeah, I thought Jan looked phenomenal. I mean, that first round, he looked dominant. It looked like it was going to be a short night after that body shot where Aldo was on the ground, and he kind of seized up and winced in pain and covered up. And then those second and third rounds, Jan kind of took a beating. I mean, Jan kind of got lit up a little bit, especially in that second round, and it looked like the tide was turning. But something about Jan is he just seems like he's just hard as nails. He just seems like he just constantly moves forward. He just is never going to be deterred no matter what you throw at him. And that was super impressive to me. I mean, the third, fourth, and fifth, I mean, Jan taking over completely, trying to tiring out Aldo, throwing bombs. I mean, later in the fight, since Jose's leg kicks were really only the first and second round, kind of disabling the lead leg of Jan, he was able to switch back to orthodox, land his power shots. And I mean, the stoppage was awful. I mean, the stoppage was really bad. I was yelling, stop the fight at the TV. I think Mario Yamasaki is somewhere watching that fight proud. But
do you think the fighter's legacy has anything to do with that? Do you think if you're Leon Roberts, you say, this is an all-time guy. This is a big shot. You don't think that? I mean, I don't know that it should affect it. I'm saying, do you think that at any point is Leon Roberts?
I mean, possibly. Yeah. I mean, Keith Pearson would disagree with that Dominic Cruz stoppage, but yeah, I mean, maybe you want to give Jose a chance, but you're saying when you say fight back like 25 plus times, you're telling a fighter to fight back constantly, and he's not moving. You've got to step in. I mean, taking strikes or not, if he's covering up and not doing anything, you've got to step in.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was very impressed with Jan last night. I mean, when he beat Faber, you know, obviously the knock on him is going to be you're beating guys who were studs in WEC a decade ago. And I get that. I thought both of them looked pretty game the night he fought them. So you can take that away from him if you want. But is a old Jose Aldo better than a old Dominic Cruz? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
we
look at 35. Is Jose Aldo, even out of his prime, still better than some of the fighters at 35 in their prime? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
I think so, yeah.
Here's one thing that I think that's going to get interesting, because we're talking about what's next. Twitter seems to want Aljamain Sterling, and I have a question for Chael Sonnen that's down the road, but I'll ask it to you. Chael talks about the push and the mandate, right? Fighters get fights either because the promotion pushes them or the fans mandate that they would get fights. And sometimes Dana kind of says things we don't want him to say, right? You say Aljamain Sterling's name. I mean, he's already got burns. You know, burns, COVID-19 or not, he's already next for Usman. But yet he's not as quick to call Aljamain Sterling's name. Do you think there's ever a chance that maybe someone like Dana, or any promoter for that matter, pushes back on fans with certain fighters only to see if the fans will demand them even more? And says to the fans, I don't know about Sterling, just to get them even more pissed off and more interested in the fight. Do you think any of that's at play here, or do you think that Dana has a legit case to have pause when he hears the name Aljamain Sterling? Because I don't think he does.
I think that's entirely possible. I think Sterling is clearly next to him. He has to be next. I mean, it's got to happen. But I think that's happened to an extent with the when Dillashaw went down to fight Cejudo. I think Dana was kind of against that for a second, kind of seeing if fans would be into it. So maybe that could be the case with Sterling. Maybe he's saying, like, oh, we'll see what happens at bantamweight. But I think Sterling will eventually that fight will get booked. I think Jan was saying he wants to fight in October, I believe, and he'd like to face Sterling then, and I'm sure Sterling would be game. So we'll see how quickly Dana comes around to the idea of Sterling getting a title shot, but it should happen. I don't expect Dana to play around with this one.
Cameron, I have a fear. I have a fear that Dominic Cruz is going to backdoor his way into this fight. And I think he's going to use the early stoppage in his last fight against Cejudo as an excuse. So I'm going to give you two options here. Could Petr Yan and Aljamain Sterling hold down either. They obviously couldn't hold down a main event spot, right? Because as a title holder, you'd expect Jan to be on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So he can't hold down the main spot. Mm-hmm. Could him and Sterling hold down that co-main? I mean, could you see them under Jones and Reyes too? Or, you know, I mean, could you see that? Because if not, we're looking at Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
What do you
think? I think they can hold it down. I think a co-main spot for them would be good, possibly with the Usman Burns fight, you know. Or actually not. It's hard to put Usman now as a main eventer just because of fan reaction kind of to last night's performance. But I think a co-main spot could work for Jan and Sterling.
It's weird because I think that Aldo got this fight because we thought that he was going to have to help out with Usman Burns, right? And then we get Usman Masvidal, and you really didn't need Aldo that, you know, because Masvidal kind of carries the water. Let's talk about Jose Aldo. What about him and Dominic Cruz? I mean, that's a hell of a poster.
I'd love to see it, but after the beating he took, Jose Aldo fan in me wants him to retire.
I'm with that. I think that if you if we're in the quarantine for a while, and you know it's like Apex or Fight Island, right? Either or. I'd like to see. Here's the thing. Here's the reason why Cruz Aldo fight interests me. Because if Cruz and Aldo fight, and Aldo wins, mm-hmm. you can discredit Cruz and just say that's the end of his career, right? He beat Dominic Cruz. Let's ride off into the sunset. If Cruz wins, you can now set Cruz up to fight Jan, which is a big, which gives Jan another high profile opponent. Do you know what I'm saying? So I like that fight a lot. I'm with you. I tweeted out last night, and it's the oldest saying in the book. It's said a lot in boxing, not as much as in MMA. Fighters don't retire, the ring retires them.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where Jose Aldo is. But everybody wants to go out with at least that one performance. The problem is, when they have that performance, they think they have more performances ahead of them. Yeah. No, it's very rare when a fighter says, I look great tonight, and it's still time to go.
Yeah, I think based on that performance last night, I think Jose looked like he could compete with, like, the top of the division. I mean, he looked good. I mean, I'm not going to say he looked phenomenal, but he looked like he was fast. He looked like he had the power there. He had the striking. He brought out the old leg kicks. They looked powerful as ever. So, yeah, I think he still could have one more in him. It just depends if he wants to go out again after taking that much damage.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Cameron, we had three title fights on the night, but it may have been the non-title fight, which was once a title fight, that was the best of them all. Rose Namajunas. She comes into the cage a lot lately with a lot of questions, most of them surrounding her mental state and desire to fight. At her best, she may be the best fighter at 125 pounds. She did look sharp in her last fight, but Andrade found the throw that ended it. The stakes for this fight, obviously this is a rematch, the stakes for this fight are, you know, Zhang Weili. Yeah. She pieced Andrade up something beautiful to take the belt, put on an all-time fight with Joanna. So this fight really was to see who had the inside track to get the next shot at the belt. I have a lot of thoughts on this fight, Cam, but I want to get yours. What do you think about this in terms of technique and what you saw, and what'd you like? And just talk to me about the fight.
No. So I saw Andrade with a different game plan. I mean, the head movement was very clear. She looked like she was controlling distance a little better. She just looked different than she did in that first fight. That first fight, she was just charging forward, bursts of energy, and letting Rose kind of take the front foot and kind of jab her face off in that first one until she got the throw. So in this one, I think Andrade kind of took over. I mean, not took over, but it was able to impose her will a little more. And I scored it for Namajunas. I think it was the right decision, but it was close. Rose versus Weili will be interesting, and I think that's clearly next, and I'm excited for it. I mean, she might be the best, and maybe Weili is the best. I think this will be a fight to really show who's the best of the weight class.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that here's what impressed me about Andrade's game plan. is that I saw it in the first, right? And what you see a lot is a fighter comes out with a game plan, and the question is, okay, how long can we stick to this game plan before we abandon it? You know, and I thought she had the right game plan, so I was like, all right, let's see how long this lasts. And she stuck with it. I mean, she kept moving the head. She kept, you know, she stayed busy. I think in the end, it came down to what as a judge you value more. Do you value Nama Yunus's volume?
Yep.
Do you value Andrade's power? Because she it was a clear game plan. It was work, move my head enough to make me hard to hit, slip her punches, and just throw big shots. And she busted her up.
Yeah.
Pretty good. You talked about Zhang Weili being next for Nama Yunus. I don't disagree with that. But here's my question. Do you think she wants to fight? And it's really a very simple question. Do you think her heart is in it? And I'm going to put something into the space that you may hate. This is more an early stoppage thing, that kind of shit we talk about on early stoppage. But I just have to ask a question because I think it's relevant. Do you think there's any bit of Pat Barry living vicariously through her? And do you think that he sort of is pushing her into space that she doesn't necessarily want to be in because she is a fighter that he was never?
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously there's no way to know that unless you have a relationship with them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so I'll just go revert to the initial question. Do you think she wants to fight?
I think she does. I mean, it seems like she wanted to get that title shot. But, I mean, she did take a lot of damage once again, so who knows if she'll take some more time off. I think, well, I'm biased towards Zhang Weili. I'm a big fan. So I think maybe once she gets in there with Zhang Weili, she'll realize she doesn't want to be there. But as far as the Pat Barry question goes, I mean, maybe. I mean, that relationship is so weird. It's a whole other conversation for another day. But he might be. I mean, in interviews, it just seems so weird the way he talks about her being her coach and everything. I don't know. I don't want to get too into the Rose Pat Barry stuff just because of how
there's a lot there.
It is.
No, yeah, you're right. There's a lot there.
There's a lot.
And you know, it's sort of a Pandora's box. Once you open it up, you don't know what's coming out. So yeah, I don't see. She, like I said, she has a very complicated relationship with fighting. It's tough. You know, I'm a teacher, and I had a girl in my class who was tall, and I said to her, I'm like, prepare for everyone in your life to tell you, ask if you want to play basketball. And she's like, I don't even like basketball. And I'm like, well, then get used to what your answer is going to be when they ask, because they're going to ask. I think that Rose is good at something that she doesn't necessarily love, or she doesn't view her skills in this, and in America specifically, but in the world, we have a very complicated relationship with people having to maximize their potential. And if you're good at something, you got to do it. If you're good at math, you got to go work for NASA or whatever. You know, it's like, why can't they do with their talent what they want? That to me is very interesting with her moving forward. I do think that she has the ability to compete with anyone in the world. So from that perspective, you know, she's free to do what she wants. But yeah, it's interesting to see what happens moving forward.
Yep, for sure.
All right, Cam, the first fight of the main card was Once Upon a Time, a Dana White Golden Girl. You know what? Isn't it funny that we call a golden boy like a teacher or coach's pet, and a golden girl is kind of an old woman?
But, that is weird. That is weird.
You know, so I would say this. At one time, Paige VanZant was Dana White's adopted daughter, basically.
Yeah.
But oh, how times have changed. She's now in the final fight of her contract, and many pundits felt like this was Dana White sending her out to the slaughter. And it's what it ended up being, pretty much. Amanda Ribas took her out in the first round via submission by armbar. The stakes going into this were huge. Ribas raising her profile, much like Petra Yan, which honestly, Cam, I mean, that's how you get a fight nowadays. Do people know who you are? Yeah. More so than wins. For Van Zant, you know, this is everything in terms of free agency. Perception, I believe, is when you leave the UFC with a win, you left, the leaving was your choice. When you leave with a loss, it's their choice.
Yeah.
I didn't see a lot of technique here. There's not a lot to really get into. There was some.
No.
And you can certainly get into it, but I think we need to talk more about what's next for Van Zant. So talk a little bit about the fight, and then we'll talk about what's next for these girls.
Yeah. So pretty much what I saw is Ribas, you know, I kind of predicted this one. I thought Ribas would be able to submit her pretty easily. I think He was got her into a compromised position. Van Zandt was able to reverse it. Didn't really know what to do from there. Gets armbarred. I think what's next for her is probably Bellator. I think Bellator will probably sign her just for the name value, namesake. And she's kind of like the female Sage Northcutt, kind of. She was like Dana's like prodigy, you know, this like poster child, this bright face that everyone wants to see fight, but doesn't work out. And now Dana's kind of like, I'm done with you, moving on, not going to re-sign you. So I think it's Bellator for her next.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, a celebrity once said, the worst thing you can be is famous and poor. I would say also one of the worst things you can be as a fighter is when your name is bigger than your game.
Yeah,
and Paige Van Zandt's name for sure is bigger than her game. So people are going to keep running her out there. And what they're going to do is they're going to run her out there against killers because they want their killer to look good against someone that everybody knows. You know, if you go into business with Paige Van Zandt, you're definitely not going into business with her for her in-cage work.
Right.
So I do like Bellator. I think her husband's in Bellator, see?
Yeah.
So there's some marketability there. Do you think that she's a Bellator level fighter, or do you think she's lower than that?
I think she's lower than that. I don't think. I mean, it's not like Bellator's women's divisions are that strong, but still, Paige Van Zandt just like, I don't think she's, you know, on that level. I mean, maybe she'll win a fight. Maybe, I don't know, maybe she'll squeak a win, but it seems like if she goes to Bellator, she'll get the top of the division and won't fare well.
So if her name were Paige Van Heusen, do you think that she would be in, like, regionals? I mean, she's always going to be maybe, a pretty good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, probably, yeah.
All right, so that's where you feel like she's at talent-wise. All right, and Hebos, how far is she from a title shot?
I think she's a few fights away. I think strawweight's a really strong division for the women's for women, and she's good. But there's a lot of killers in front of her that are still moving up. The Yan Xiaonans of the world, the Claudia Gadelha still moving. Tatiana Suarez. So I mean, there's a lot of girls in there that want to get lined up for a title shot. I think Hebos can put some more wins together and get there. I think she's real. She might be the real deal. I don't know how she fares against the Roses and Weilis of the world, but I think she has the potential to get there.
So what do we do with her? I mean, do we keep throwing big names at her and see what she's got? Or do you like, I mean, do you put her on the track of like, I'm going to have her fight like Angela Hill, Carla Esparza, you know what I'm saying? Like names where she's probably better than they are
at this point.
Or do you put her in there with people that, you know, like Mackenzie Dern or other people you're trying to give a push to?
I think it's the names. I think you got to realize that she's legit. She's better than some of the prospects in there. So I think what's next for her is probably Esparza or Gadelha or even Tisha Torres if they want that. So I think you know, kind of keep the prospects like Yan Xiaonan, like move them up against the bigger names. Have them fight the people, the names that people will recognize. That way, when they beat them, they'll move right ahead, get in line for a title shot. I think she needs to fight up in the rankings for sure. I think Angela Hill's kind of all over the place, jumping weight classes, fighting up and down in rankings. So I think it'll be someone ahead of her.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on to the prelims. You know, it got interesting. Some of these prelims, it's funny. The Apex prelims were bangers. And I'm not saying this wasn't, but, you know, the Apex prelims had the advantage of the small cage.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Yuri Prokoshka. He got in there with Volkan Ozdemir.
Yeah.
Cam, this kid's wild. And he got real cute out there. He did. He got a victory. He got a KO or TKO for that matter. So, no, it was a KO. Yeah, because he walked it off round two.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So here's my real question. Oh, I have two. One, how far up the rankings can he go and stay getting cute like that with, you know, dropping his hands and sticking his face out there? Who can he not get away with doing that against? And secondly, he went in there against Ozdemir, who was ranked 7th. Does he deserve the 7th ranking? I mean, it's not that simple in life where you beat the 7th ranked guy and then you get his ranking. does he deserve to be in the top 10? You answered that one quickly. Let's get back to the other one.
Sorry.
How far up the rankings can he play that game? Because I think he can get away with it with, John Jones more than Dominic Reyes, just because of styles. Do you think that he can keep fighting like that and still pull it off?
I think there are a few guys that he could get away with it with. Corey Anderson, I think he'd get away with it. Thiago Santos, because they're both kind of like that. They're both kind of flashy. I think he'd get away with it. I think Glover would be a very interesting fight for him. I think Glover would test him a lot, but I think he would still do his dance and stuff. He would still do his weird look to the side, like look away from the guy, do the kung fu hands. But I think John Jones and Dominic Reyes would kind of pick him apart, you know?
Yeah.
They're both similar in size. They've got probably, I don't want to say better striking, but seems more controlled, more refined. So I think he has a ton of potential in division. I mean, a dream fight would be Johnny Walker.
I saw some people calling for that early. Yeah.
That would be unreal. I mean, there are a lot of fights in that division. That would be really fun for him. I think he adds new life to the division.
So let's talk about gimmick fighters, because why not, right? Mm-hmm. They're fun. Venom Page. Guys like that. Is the gimmick what makes them good, in your opinion, or are they just really talented guys who are good enough to get away with it? Meaning, is the secret to beating a guy like Prokoshka or Page or whatever is saying to them, no, we're going to fight a normal fight tonight. I'm going to demand of you, like, I'm going to put you in a position where, like, maybe I'm going to kick your legs so that you got to say, you know, like, if you look away from me, I'm going to kick you right to the body, to where you're like, okay, I got to get my head screwed on straight here. Is that the secret to them? Or do you think that the gimmick, like, you know, they say a lot of guys who keep their hands down, they're effective strikers because you don't see where the punches are coming from. It's harder to pick up the punches. What's your thought on gimmick fighters?
I think in the example of Venom Page, I think he's skilled enough where he gets away with it. I actually think he was winning the Lima fight till he got knocked out. But same with Prochazka. He's skilled enough where he can get away with it. He has a strong, solid kickboxing background. But I mean, we'll have to see against someone like Corey Anderson, who's going to try and take him down and be shooting double legs on him, or like Thiago Santos is going to be throwing kicks at him, or Dominic Reyes is someone who puts together a solid game plan to try and pin him in a corner, try and just hold him down so he isn't going crazy on you for the entire fight.
You know, I think Santos would be a really interesting fight.
Yeah.
That to me, the fan in me and the guy who likes craziness in the octagon is always going to want the Johnny Walker fight. I think that they're close enough. You know, Walker was on this trajectory until he got stopped. So I'm pulling for that fight. Yeah. But I would like to see him against someone, like you said, just a no-nonsense kind of, I'm in an orthodox stance. I'm going to come forward, or southpaw, but I'm just going to come forward, keep my hands up, kick the hell out of your legs, you know, straight 1-2s, and really just make a long night for you. I think Santos or Glover would be interesting to see if he keeps that up against them. But, yeah, I think the Walker fight's next. Let's have some fun.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Muslam Salikov defeated Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos by split decision. Who'd you have this fight for?
I had Dos Santos winning this one. I thought it was close. I thought the third round I gave to Salikov and the first two to ZDS. It was an interesting one. It was fun. I mean, I enjoyed this fight a lot. It was kind of what I expected, a good striking battle.
All right, let's move on. Makwan Amirakani defeated Danny Henry by submission via anaconda choke. It's funny. The commentators for me couldn't shut up about Danny Henry. Next thing you know, he's getting choked.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Amirakani here. He seems like a guy they want to market. I just don't know if he's on that level yet. I mean, he trains with Connor or at Connor's gym. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this kid? Is he like one of those guys where like the amount of distance he has to travel to get to be a top 10 fighter is exceeded by his age? Or do you think that he's got the time? Like, what do you think about him? Is he a live prospect, or is he just somebody that's like?
I think he's a live prospect. I mean, I think he's pretty good. I think he's kind of becoming like a wizard on the ground in MMA right now. I'd love to see him fight Ryan Hall. I think that would be a really good fight. But obviously, Ryan Hall's booked against Ricardo Lamas. But Amir Khani, I mean, I don't know about like top 10 potential, but he's good. I mean, he's only getting better. His striking is decent. It's solid. He threw a flying knee in that fight before eventually wrapping up the choke. I'd like to see, I think there are a lot of potential matchups for him that he could do well in against ranked opponents. Not a lot, but I mean, a lot of opponents in the division, a couple ranked opponents that I'd like to see him against. There's a lot of potential for him, I think. He's only 31. He's still in his athletic prime. I think he's got time and room to grow.
You know, I like him being at SPG because I'm a fan of a guy who joins a gym where he knows there's something that he very specifically that he can contribute, yeah. And he's going to take a lot from it. Now, the scary thing there is you have to determine what is the reason why Connor is most effective. Is it because Connor is just who Connor is, or how much does John Kavanaugh have to do with that? If John Kavanaugh has a lot to do with it, then great for Amir Khani because John Kavanaugh is punching the clock every day. Conor McGregor is not punching the clock every day. Conor McGregor shows up when Conor McGregor has fights. He's not there to help Amir Khani get ready for Danny Henry. So, you know, I like him at SBG if he can draw from Conor, but we'll see. All right, Leonardo Santos defeated Roman Bogatov by unanimous decision. This was a weird one. And just talk to me about it. I mean, was Bogatov just, was it
experience?
Miscommunication? Yeah, was there like a something lost in translation? Or does he just like groin strikes? I mean, I don't know what to make of this guy. What's going on here?
I mean, I don't know the rules of the promotions where he fought before. So maybe they were allowed, but
maybe they were encouraged the way he was fighting.
And he seemed to be confused afterwards on why he was getting
that's a big deal
off. But in that second round too, there was another one where I was yelling at the TV to stop the fight with the barrage Santos put on him after eventually like gassing out and just laying up against the fence for the rest of it. But the knee, the groin strikes, and then the illegal knee to the head. I mean, like. That was like an unreal sequence in that fight. I mean, I thought it was going to end similarly to Rothwell Struve, where Struve got kicked in the nuts twice and then finished by Rothwell.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was scared of that. I mean, this was a weird fight for sure. This was very awkward. I thought Santos looked really good in those first two rounds until he got hit down low. But yeah, I mean, Santos, I mean, a 40-year-old vet like he is, to be able to weather that storm in the third round was pretty impressive.
This has got to be one of those fights where you go home and you just say, is this worth it? Like, I'm 40,
yeah.
Getting groin struck, his truck repeatedly. You know, yeah. I'm sure that he was like, this is going to be the resurrection of my career. Next thing you know, this guy's taking him out below the belt.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Marcin Tybura versus Maxim Grishin. You know, Grishin trains with Stipe, and that's pretty much where it ends. As far as like, you know, it's weird when you talk about who people's training partners are, because a lot of times, you know, saying that someone's your training partner would be like saying Bo Nickel would walk into MMA tomorrow and be successful, you know, just because he helped Masvidal train. It's, what do you think about this fight? I mean, we'll keep it brief, obviously, in this part of the show.
Yeah, this one kind of went how I expected. I thought Tybura was just going to be a lot bigger and just weigh on him. And that's exactly what he did. That's kind of Tybura's style. I don't know what Grishin really brought to the table. He didn't really have the power. He had the speed advantage. I think he was clearly faster, more athletic. He was moving around a lot, but he didn't have a lot for Tybura just at all.
As we move on, if you tune into this show to hear me butcher names, get ready because your time is coming up. As Rulian Paiva defeated, let's go for it, Zalgas Zumagulov. Not too bad, I think. By unanimous decision, 29-28 across the board. What do you think about this fight?
I thought this was a great fight. Both look game. I mean, recently we've had some really good flyweight fights. They've been high activity, a lot of output. This one, not as much output. I thought it was a close decision. I like that it was given to Paiva. I like Paiva as a prospect in that division. I also like Zumagulov as a prospect. Not a lot more can be said about that other than I like both these guys, and they both look pretty good.
I mean, they put together a good fight, but I mean, neither one of them is going to save the flyweight division, right? I mean, we can't.
No.
We're not going to push them forward in that way. Okay.
Right.
All right, Carol Rosa defeated Vanessa Mello. Much easier names to say by unanimous decision. 30-26 is a couple of them, and 30-27. Anything here?
No, I think Mello isn't UFC caliber, so I think she's going to be gone after this one. And Rosa, you know, looked good. I mean, not a whole lot can be said about this one. It's not a doesn't have a big impact on the division either.
David Grant started the night off by knocking out Mark Day. What do you got here?
This one was fun. I thought Davy Grant is a live dog. He was an underdog coming into this, and he just took the fight today. I mean, that's all it was. He had the power, locked him down, constant pressure, big shots. I thought I saw that right hook to the body, left hook up top combo was money all night, and then dropped him with it, finished the fight with it. Just a great performance.
And let's talk about David Grant as we move forward to the performances of the night and do some housekeeping. This is a stat I would love if someone's listening to this and you'd love to compile stats and you happen to have this one, please reach out to us and give me this. I want to know how many people have started the card and ultimately got a performance bonus, because I think a lot of times Dana puts that 50 grand out there as it's up for grabs, but sometimes I think he uses it to supplement the income of fighters who are being underpaid. But that's a story for another day as well.
Yeah,
and typically, it's a little bit further along the card when you see the first fight of the night getting the performance bonus. So on this night, we had the fight of the night, Jessica Andrade and Rose Namajunas, 50,000 to each fighter. Yuri Prokoshka got 50 grand for knocking out Ozdemir, and the aforementioned Davy Grant got 50 grand for taking out Martin Day. Do you agree with these performance bonuses?
Yeah, I think these are fair. Piotr Jan didn't get a bonus, did he?
He did not.
I thought that fight could have gotten a fight of the night or a performance for Piotr. But yeah, the rest of them are fair.
Okay. All right, then let's move on just to some takeaways here. As you leave this card, I used to joke around in past recaps that I've done, you know, someday when you're sitting with your grandkids and they're on your knee and we're talking about UFC 251, what's the thing that you're going to remember and the thing that you're going to say? That was the night that what?
I think the night that Piotr Jan established himself as a great champ. I mean, well, not a great champion, but a great fighter. I mean, a solid champion. Maybe it'll be the night that bumped Max Holloway up to lightweight permanently. And maybe the night that Usman got some national mainstream recognition.
You know, I want to... We talked about this earlier, but I do want to touch on one thing. Well, first of all, the three things that you said I love, especially the one kind of quiet as kept of Max Holloway going to lightweight permanently. I mean, that's already a stacked division. But, you know, when we talk about being selfish MMA fans, which we all are, there's some matchups at 55 that you'd like Max Holloway. You know, just, again, if we're creating nice posters, Cameron, putting Max Holloway next to a couple of guys at 55 would be nice. But I want to talk about what you said about Jan. And I know that you hesitated to call him a great champion. I understand why, because he hasn't had that championship.
Yeah.
But this was a championship performance. This was
– Yes, 100%.
You have now gotten the thing that makes you great taken away. Can you still – you know, one of the things that Chael Sonnen says about Jon Jones is he has an off night and he still walks home with a belt. You know, like OSP or Reyes or – same thing can be said about GSP. They have off nights and they still walk home with belts. Anderson Silva had an off night against Chael, still walked home with the belt, right? So I think that is interesting. The thing that Petr Yan showed me tonight was he can have an off night and still walk away with a belt. And that's a big – not everybody can do that. And I think that when you say he solidified himself as a champion, you know, they call 4 and 5 the championship rounds for a reason.
Yeah, I think Jan and Volkanovski both proved that they're guys who can bank on fourth and fifth rounds if they need to. that they've got that gas tank where they can turn it on those last two, kind of like a John Jones style fight, like John Jones against Gus the first time, where he, the first three rounds were up in the air, and then fourth or fifth, he really brought it out. That's kind of how the greatest champions fight. The most dominant champions, maybe not the greatest, but the most dominant champions will be able to lose a round, be able to make adjustments, and then turn it on at the end.
Cameron, the things that don't show up in box scores when you're a podcast host like I am is when you're able to crystallize everything into one thing and make a point that you wanted to make earlier and have everything come full circle. We're about to do this now. Do you think Petr Yan and Alex Volkanovski are in each other's futures? And this is why I asked that. Because when I watched Petr Yan fight Jose Aldo, he looked bigger than him. But they were fighting at 35. Yeah. And you have Volkanovski, who's a smaller featherweight champion in respect to Max. He's about Aldo's size, but in respect to Max. So you can run a 45er a little bit bigger than both Aldo and Volkanovski. Mm-hmm. In terms of who these guys are shaping up to be, do you think their future, and if the saying is every Muhammad Ali needs a Joe Frazier, and the question becomes, can you find Joe Frazier in your division, or do you need to go to another division to find your Joe Frazier like Henry Cejudo did? Yeah. Is that what the future holds for Petr Yan and Alex Volkanovski? The biggest fight they're going to have is between each other, or is there something else?
I think for Petr Yan, there's something else. I don't know about featherweight. Featherweight really doesn't have the budding stars that bantamweight does. Always people are going to be talking about, you know, super fights, double champ stuff. I think Volkanovski, I don't see that fight ever happening, but what I do see is Petr Yan holding on to the belt and maybe Sugar Sean O'Malley rising all the way to the top and challenging Petr Yan, and that's the massive pay-per-view seller for Petr Yan's career.
He's the wild card, that kid. He really is. He's local here to Phoenix, and he's the wild card of, like, he's a big fight for Yan. He could go up to 45. Like, there's a lot. He's got a frame that he could put some weight on. He's interesting because he's got a lot in his tool bag and doesn't need to use it often. So he's the kid that really is interesting. All right, you kind of touched on it, but I'll ask you the two questions I try and ask you every time. Who was your star of the night? Who's the person that you think really was the guy you're walking away from this being like, he, for lack of a better way of putting it, won the night?
Petr Yan, 100%. Yeah.
And who's the fighter you're most excited to see next?
Jiří Prochazka.
There you go. Those gimmick fighters, man, they catch your eye.
Gotta love them.
All right, so we're about to wrap it up. Anything else you have left to say on this, or have we said everything that needs to be said?
That's it. I think we covered all of them. I think we got it.
I think we're good too. All right, guys, there you have it. Another Fight Night Picks recap show is in the books. Be sure and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit us in the comments. Take shots at me. Call me Craig's father. Whatever you want to do, I can take it. I'm a big boy. Listen to us on Spotify and iTunes. We'll see you next week. Peace.